Hello and welcome to the Total Film spoiler podcast for Birds of Prey. So if you haven't seen this, go away, watch it, come back and listen. But if you have, let's crack on.
The Joker and I broke up. I wanted a fresh start. But it turns out I wasn't the only Damon Gotham looking for emancipation.
Spectacular news!
Miss Quinn, she belongs to me.
Who are you guys?
So today, in the post room, we are literally recording this in the post room because we cannot get into our recording room. I have Jack Shepherd.
Hello.
And also Matt Meatham.
Hello.
And it's quite cramped in here.
It's cosy.
It's cosy. And also, I'm getting a really good view of Jiffy Bags and who's getting a lot of posts in our company. So that's interesting. So we're going to talk about Birds of Prey. What was our overriding feeling about it? Is this something that's going to progress the DC universe? Is it a worthy contender to the crown that has been set by Wonder Woman?
Well, I did the review of Total Film and I really, really liked it. I gave it
how many
four stars?
Yep.
4 stars. And I just thought it was really fun, basically. That was my kind of number one takeaway. It was just a lot of fun. There's this kind of joke going around that every recent DC film is a step in the right direction. But it does feel like they are, now that they've abandoned the shared universe thing, it feels like they're really making these more unique standalone films, and it's really working for them at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. I was just about to say it's a step in the right direction.
But oh, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. It is, though. We spoke about it on our main podcast, and I said that I'm now gradually getting more and more excited for DC releases than I am the Marvel releases.
You know, now fighting talk.
It is fighting. I mean, now we're post Endgame. You know, we're going back with Black Widow. I feel like we're a few years too late for a Black Widow movie, but this is, you know, perfect time for Harley Quinn one. Now I'm like super excited for the new Suicide Squad as well, because this film nicely tees it up. Yeah, I think I'm just really excited for DC now. I'm a changed man.
You're a changed man. Fanboy. Swapped allegiances. I think it's just such a massive step away from the somber darkness misery that we saw with Batman versus Superman and the Justice League, where everyone was just like, God, can they just cheer up? We sort of saw that with Wonder Woman, brought light to it, I felt. And then obviously Shazam brought some fun, and Aquaman brought just nuts, completely mentalness, and sort of don't really care. And this film seems to be all of that. It is light, it's fun, it's frothy, it's colourful, it's bright, it's poppy, it just like zings along, and it's so fast moving, and it just feels like a massive bunch of fun. Shall we talk about it in more detail?
So I have a few pointers to point us in the right direction I want to talk about. So because we start talking about other DC films, we should probably start by talking about the elephant in the room that is Suicide Squad.
Yes.
And how this film links to that. Because obviously at the beginning, we get a quick recap with a classic looking comic book Joker, which I was surprised by, because then later we see kind of the back of Jared Leto like Joker. I was quite surprised by the Suicide Squad links, because in your feature, they told you that it wasn't going to be linked.
I suppose they were kind of, in hindsight, looking back, they're perhaps talking more tonally, perhaps, in that it does feel like its own thing. Also, they did describe it as not being a sequel to Suicide Squad, when it does follow directly on from the events of Suicide Squad. So in that sense, I think it is, you can classify it as a sequel for sure, but it feels very different. And yeah, you mentioned the Joker, and that was possibly one of the few sort of bum notes for me, that I did feel it was quite conspicuous, Jared Leto's absence, and kind of those couple of back of the head shots you get where it's like, is that a stand-in? Is it unused footage? It just felt a bit awkward almost.
Yeah.
But it's not such a big part of the film that it actually kind of derailed it or caused a massive problem for me. But it was something that, just stuck out a little bit.
But they do move on from Joker pretty fast.
Yeah.
I mean, she gets to the nitty-gritty of having broken up with him. And there's a sort of this self-awareness of saying, he took it really badly, I was really cool. And she's like banging on the door and crying and obviously squirting cheese into her mouth and just throwing darts at his picture. But that's over within like 5 minutes. We're done with the Joker. And then it's on to Harley Quinn just getting pissed around town, living her best life, running trucks into the chemical works. And so for me, even though it felt reverse engineered and a bit awkward, I didn't mind, because they just got it out of the way as soon as possible and just got onto the meat of the story.
I think that's why I found bits of it, when they did make references to it, because there was like there was a picture of Boomerang in the police station, and then her like prodigy kind of makes a comment about like, who are you, and she does like a recap of how she got there and says like, oh, I got captured by Batman and stuff.
Yeah,
and suddenly when you hear like Batman being said, I was like, oh, why does that feel jarring all
and
of a sudden?
And she names obviously the hyena Bruce after that hot Batman guy, or that hot tycoon guy. So there's all these little nods in that direction.
I thought that stuff kind of worked because I found it funny. And I guess in the whole question of a sequel coming up again, is this a sequel or not? You basically didn't need to have seen Suicide Squad because it brought you up to speed very quickly. So you certainly wouldn't feel like left behind if you hadn't seen it. So I kind of thought it worked in that way.
But it's also important to establish that this is Gotham, and obviously those characters do exist and live in it. And, you know, whilst she's, you know, going shopping and stealing things and tearing around town, Batman is somewhere in Gotham in another part of the world doing his thing. And it sort of works that those things have to be mentioned, don't they? Because going down the line, surely, ultimately, if this is a success, then Harley Quinn and Batman will meet.
You hope, like, Robert Pattinson versus, you know, Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn will hopefully be a very fun adventure. Well, it depends what our Pats's Bats is like, but
whether he's doing it Lighthouse style or not.
Yeah, exactly.
I kind of almost don't hope they cross over in a way, because I just think they've got into such a nice groove at the moment with doing these standalone films that just aren't kind of stuck in these structures and don't have to fit in with anything else. And obviously Marvel does that so well, and they're pretty much the only one that does it well. So I think, yeah, I'm all for having these slightly more unique, slightly more sort of personality-led film.
Actually, you're quite right, because, like, I guess the MCU at times can feel quite one note, which isn't necessarily a criticism, but it can feel like, you know, they're very much all of the same brand.
It's like it's strength and weakness at the same time.
Yeah, right? Exactly. But then with this, you kind of, the Joker came out, and you've got DC doing either the super serious films, or suddenly they're doing Birds of Prey and Shazam. Mm. And it's like, that's the complete opposite end of the spectrum. I think it's a good antidote to the Marvel stuff, which you can kind of like get along with and see them all crossing over.
And they're all tonally very much in a similar area, whereas they're tonally all over the place for DC, which has been, again, for DC, a weakness. But also in this case, I think it's a plus.
Yeah, for sure. Something that's been like a talking point since Birds of Prey is, you know, whether this should have been perhaps a Harley Quinn solo film or an actual team up, because it takes them quite a while to get together. How did you guys feel about that?
Ultimately, it worked for me. I thought the balance was there, that everyone got enough moments to shine. Obviously, Harley is the star, but I suppose she is such an intense character that maybe she might be a bit too much if you didn't have it kind of diluted down with those other characters too. I don't know. But yeah, for me, it pretty much worked. How about you guys?
I don't know. I think it took a while. I think when she was off screen, the film just didn't work quite as well for me. It kind of lacked the energy that Margot Robbie brought to the role and that kind of fun, unpredictable angle. They only kind of come together as the Birds of Prey.
In the final third.
In the final third, when they're all at the fun house.
Yeah.
And it
yeah.
kind of feels like they've only got them all there together in, you know, quite spurious ways, you know, the cop turning bad and stuff. It didn't feel quite as earned as perhaps it should have done, because that we didn't perhaps spend enough time with that character to be like, oh yeah, she's actually got a bad spell and she's gonna like kill a load of goons and things like that.
Yeah, and it sort of did feel weirdly episodic, sort of that then when they actually did get into a gang, it was just different fights, which were so cool, and we'll talk about that, but they were just like different fights in different outfits in different locations. So now we're going to do like the one with the big hands, now we're going to do the thing in the light up archway. Just seemed like a series of different areas in which to have fights, and it didn't really feel like the gang really progressed until obviously Black Canary did her shriek, and then only then did it sort of move out of just being a series of really awesome fights. For me, we didn't really get the girls bonding that I wanted to see. There wasn't the time for that. That's the other thing, it's quite a tight running time. It goes really fast. There's no fat on it. It is trimmed and lean, and it is going for it. So it felt like we gave the time to sort of building up who these girls were, how they were going to intersect, how they were going to be turned together to their emancipation to become the Birds of Prey, but then didn't actually give that satisfying feel of them actually being a girl gang, apart from a few little jokes in the funhouse. So that was my disappointment.
I suppose I would sort of counter that by saying it felt to me more like an origin story for the gang. Mm. And presumably, like, I mean, depending on how the box office for this one is, but seemingly there's a lot of buzz and it seemed to be tracking well. So if it does well, surely we will just get more of the birds as an actual gang. So that would be my take on it.
Yeah, because we end the film with Black Canary, Renee Montana and Huntress all together, and Harley says like, oh,
it's
they're
a
going
lame
around.
Gang.
Yeah, but she calls them like, oh, they're the Birds of Prey or whatever. And it is like, oh, that's the sequel right there, isn't it? Like the three of them. I mean, I take like Huntress. Her backstory is kind of done quite quickly. And then she's a very one note. This is my funny thing. I'm socially awkward. And that's her character. I feel like it hasn't quite developed enough for me to be like, I really want to see that movie. I don't know.
Yeah. And I kind of wanted to know more about Rosie Perez, why she drank so much as a police officer. Yeah. And, you know, what demons she was harboring, which maybe we'll get into in a further film. There were some nice moments, though, that were very, I think you can tell it was directed by a woman and it is, you know, about women. Just something as stupid as in the middle of a fight, one character offering another a hair tie because that's what you need. And every woman could relate to that. You know, like if you're roundhouse kicking someone in the head, you're going to need your hair tying back.
Yeah.
I loved little touches like that. I just think I want more of that. Maybe that's the taster for me that I want the next film because I want more of that stuff.
I also think with Huntress, for example, because it is this kind of archetypal sort of badass character. To me, I just liked seeing that side that she couldn't deliver her kind of cool lines properly. Actually, it was kind of a small way of, we're not going to get loads of time with this character, but it did make her a bit different and, kind of made me want to see more from her, really.
A couple of the set pieces in it. The big one is the funhouse.
Yes.
Did that work for you guys? Because I know a couple of people have said that it can be quite confusing because there's so much action happening in that scene. I thought the blocking was really great and I thought it would look pretty fantastic, but some of the editing was perhaps slightly much. But I don't know, what did you think?
I loved it. It was just a full-on let's go, including roller skates, you know. Like I love, you know, seeing a henchman get twatted in the face by a roller skate. You know, it taps into all of those things, like, you know, Bond films or even It, this sort of idea of having a scrap in a hall of mirrors or in a, you know, funhouse. And I loved when Huntress bounced across those bars and was like playing it like a sort of piano. I thought it looked really cool, and yes, production value wise it was amazing. It looked great.
Felt very comic booky as well, which is sort of what you want.
You can imagine like kapow and pow coming out of their fists and stuff.
And again, it's another way in which the film just in a good way feels smaller scale. I just like the fact it wasn't the fate of the world again hanging in the balance with some massive CGI bad, and it was just a good, well choreographed scrap basically.
Sort of, and you know, I'm sure people will be like, what? But it sort of reminded me a bit Warriors, you know, with the sort of the idea of these different gangs and the roller derby aspect of it and all of that. It was just really cool. And the editing actually, and the sort of even the way it was sort of the screenplay was a bit Tarantino, wasn't it? Little bit. I like that. You know, it's nice to see that sort of attention to detail.
Especially at the beginning where, you know, you have kind of Harley, she's like telling a story and then she's like, oh, wait, hold up. We need to like go back a
rewind.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And also the sort of the labeling of, you know, freeze frame and labeling grievance of what this person has against her. And then, you know, all of that sort of the little comic book touches. It's just, I thought it was just really well done.
Yeah. I don't think we've really seen that before too much in like comic book stuff. What immediately is coming to mind is like Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Scott Pilgrim, yeah, totally.
It's kind of like an evolution of that movie. And we haven't seen that for so long. But if Scott Pilgrim came out today, I know it wasn't a huge success then, but I feel like it probably would be today.
But it's found its audience. People love that film.
Yeah.
I also think Deadpool, there's a lot of DNA of Deadpool in.
Because you've got fourth wall breaking
and
the sort of funny violence. I mean, let's talk about the violence here. They haven't skimped on that, where, you know, they haven't tried to tone it down for the ladies. There's some properly violent stuff that happens in this film, which is kind of cool to see.
I don't think it would have really worked if they had have toned it down to a sort of 12A PG-13 level. Because, I don't know, it just gave it this extra feeling of sort of danger and sort of wildness, I suppose.
And Gotham is a dangerous place to live. We know this from many films we've seen before. Yeah. So it does have to feel like people really could get their face peeled off at any time by Roman, played by Ewan McGregor.
Speaking of Ewan.
Yes.
How did we find Ewan? I know, Matt, you weren't quite the biggest fan.
Again, this is another of the rare things I was not sold on in the film, was Ewan McGregor, really. That I thought he was fine and he clearly was having a lot of fun, which is nice to see, and it's something a bit different for him. But I never found Roman particularly sinister. He never felt like that big of a threat. I think partly because everyone keeps talking about Joker being the biggest threat in town and him being the kind of second fiddle to that. Maybe it was that. Maybe it was just that I don't know if he was quite the right person to be cast. But I thought Chris Messina, I thought, was fantastic as Victor Zsasz. I thought there was real sort of menace to him.
Yeah.
but Ewan I wasn't quite so sold on.
That's funny. I mean, I wasn't the biggest fan of Ewan at first. You know, he's doing like a funny accent and things like that. But then I don't know when it clicked, but something did. I think it was just like when he was doing like the face cutting and things. And I was just like,
He didn't technically do that.
Well,
though.
You know, ordering
he ordered
it around,
that in
yeah.
his white suit.
Yeah. But that was like, I thought it was really funny, but not in that way, but like, as Jack. In like, I liked it. Like,
think
him
about
as a
what
character.
You're saying. Okay.
Was like, I wasn't necessarily scared. I think it was the relationship between him and Victor Zsasz. Mm. Like this kind of like weirdly homoerotic vibe going on between them. And then it suddenly went into this very uncomfortable Me Too landscape where, you know, he's demanding this woman dances on a table and someone rips off the dress. And you're just like, actually, that is so terrifying and so disgusting. That was the moment I was like, yeah, this guy's a real bad guy. I can't wait to see him die.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of shared some DNA with the horrible scene in Bombshell when,
oh God,
you know, Margot Robbie is forced to sort of perform for Roger Ailes. That felt a real indicator of what a douchebag this guy was. And the relationship between him and his henchman was quite interesting because they were facilitators for each other's more horrible sides. So, you know, like obviously the henchman wants to kill more people and cut his body and have all these wounds on himself because it's some sort of weird psychological delight for him. But he's equally egging on Roman to, you know, be sexist, to be horrific, to take out hits on people. And they're sort of mutually egging each other on to be hideous. And that's quite an interesting, found that quite an interesting dynamic to watch.
Yeah, I quite liked his black mask as well.
Yeah, he did look cool in that.
He looked really cool.
One aspect I did find interesting about Roman, and this came from when I did the feature, I spoke to the costume designer, Erin Benak. And basically, if you look closely at Roman's costumes, there's so many little details. Like he's got these pajamas that have basically got his face kind of woven into the fabric of them. And he's got these kind of monogrammed lining to his suits and things like that. And you really kind of see his egotism and personality through the clothes. And that was part of the character that really worked for me.
There's also the bit where he's looking at the statue of himself as well, isn't there? That's a really funny scene when he's got like the little heads and stuff as well.
He's just so egotistical. He's a collector as well. I found that interesting that he liked to collect things. So, you know, whether it's a shrunken head or people, he talked about owning people in town. Why don't I own this person? He's just this guy that sees anything as a commodity, be that a person or a piece of art. And that, again, makes him more interesting. He's not just a bad guy who's just like, doesn't just want the power. He wants to own. He wants to be kingpin in every sense. I personally enjoyed McGregor in that role. He seemed like he was having an absolute ball.
I feel like I'm a bit of an outsider with this because obviously when you write the review, there's no other reviews up. No one else has seen it. But pretty much everyone seems really liking apart from me.
And also, let's not forget as well, just, you know, inside baseball, but you saw that in a screening on your own with no other audience. Jack and I saw it with an audience of people who were clapping, applauding. Women were whooping at certain points, which really gives you that idea that as a community experience, people are going to really enjoy it.
There was some road clapping going on in our screening, though.
Yes.
There was one bit like when all the legs were being broken in one scene and someone was just like, yes, clap, clap, clap. And everyone was just like, not sure if this is the moment to clap. Maybe like later on. Anyway.
And as we're talking spoilers, one other thing I'd say about Roman is I found his death scene slightly anticlimactic as well.
I loved it.
That it was just, I felt it was over a bit too briefly, but especially as he just got the black mask, you know, and he'd become that black mask he had been hoping for, really. And then it was just so quick. It was just slip a grenade in his pocket and that's it. And he's done.
But I love the fact that his vanity would not have wanted to go out like that. You know, he would have wanted a massive showdown and a huge thing and he'd go down in flames. But actually all that happens is he's pushed off a pier and he blew up into 1,000 pieces and literal fish food. I thought it was apt that he would be served such a kind of ignoble death.
I get that, but I'm with Matt completely. Because I don't know, there was something about it where it just didn't feel quite earned. You know, you saw Cassandra Cain like take out the pin and she, you know, makes a joke about the ring she's got and stuff, and then it's almost like too quick where you're just like, there
I think
wasn't,
especially after
setup.
The fun of the fun house fun, yeah, you know, and that scrap that was all so well done that I then almost just thought, oh, it just felt like it was a bit thrown away, really.
Yeah, it felt like a race to it almost, especially when you know, you've got the big build up of them walking along that pier with all the weird statues and stuff,
and the fog.
Yeah, and then there's him and you kind of want there to be like a fight or something, or maybe it's just because we're geared up to that from, you know, other superhero films.
We're just conditioned to expect it.
Yeah, exactly. We're like, oh, this is like the big boss battle. But then it was like, nope, over, done, end film.
But you know, like, this girl needs to get back to her sandwich, and it can't be overestimated the fact that the thing she wants most in the world, Harley Quinn, wants egg, bacon, cheese, greasy fried sandwich.
Man, it looks so good.
It looks so good.
And I was just so happy for her. She actually got it at the end. It kind of really, yeah, really resolved something that was kind of standing out. And I was like, man, she's just got to get this sandwich at the end. Otherwise, I'm going to leave just hungry and desperate for like a fried egg.
I think I enjoyed watching her bite into that baby as much as anything else in the film.
Yeah. I think that was the most upsetting thing about the beginning of the film, wasn't it?
Yes.
Just watching it land on the road and you're just like, oh, no.
Especially when we just had that. I love that scene with the breakfast porn where she's just like, it was like, da-da-dun-da-da. And it was just like this guy with this dirty van or wherever she's got it from. Yeah. And she's just windblown and she's just, oh my God, this cheese sandwich, cheesy eggy sandwich. Yeah, I'm totally with her on that. That is breakfast porn.
Speaking of the ending, when she gets the sandwich and she's in the car with her new prodigy, Cassandra, who I would say probably my favorite of the birds of prey. Apart from Harley, it's probably Cassandra. I just love her, like, fun, stealing interactions and the way she just doesn't really give a shit about anyone else or anything like that. I thought she was really, really good and really well acted as well.
And also you get that little tiny bit of backstory, and that's all you really need to know about her, where she sat on the stairs and Black Canary finds her there and is like, gets something to eat. So she's this kid that is just ignored. She's with foster parents, I think, and they don't care about her. So she has to be self-sufficient. She has to be out for herself. So you can totally understand where she's coming from and why she does what she does, which was a lovely little bit of just very quick narrative that worked.
For me, I thought they were all really well cast, actually, and I actually thought they really worked well together. That was just one of the things that I thought was great about the film. But Journey Smollett-Bell, who plays Black Canary, aka Dina Lance, I thought she really stood out.
Yeah.
She was just really cool, really badass. You could really believe she was kind of beating those people up. And great singer as well. Like, she just literally, I just thought she was great. She really sort of surprised me.
Yeah, and I'd want to watch a film with her in another one.
Yeah.
She's just really cool. Badass.
There's The New Suicide Squad by James Gunn as well,
yes,
who Margot Robbie is playing Harley Quinn in. So she's going to be back. I mean, I would love to see Cassandra Cain in that film as well, but I don't think she's there. But are we ready for more Harley Quinn in a year, do you think?
Yeah, there's plenty more I think you could do with Harley. Like, just, I think because she's just so irreverent and fun that you just almost want to see her messing loads of stuff up, really. I do anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter what she's doing, she is just living her best life, which is just screwing things up. Whether it's in the nightclub, she's nicking people's drinks, vomiting in handbags, whether it's at the supermarket where she's just not paying for anything, she's so sort of doesn't give a flying F. And that's quite fun to watch someone do that when we're all living our lives as we are. We all have to toe the line, and she is wearing whatever the hell she wants. Also, you know, can we just say her costumes were amazing?
Yeah.
She looked great. And, you know, it wasn't, they're revealing, but they were not sexual costumes. They're just really cool. Loved her sparkly socks. So I would love, I want a pair of sparkly socks. I'm even maybe considering a sparkly bum bag. And so, you know, I would love to see more of her. And also, I think Margot Robbie's got into this absolute, like, she's really got her now, because she's played her in Suicide Squad. She's now played her and obviously exec produced. So she's fully into it and still filming as her in Suicide Squad. So I feel like she would really be a great shepherd for the next iteration of Harley Quinn. She really understands this character. And I think, judging by what she's produced here, really understands what we want to see her do as well.
Yeah, I can kind of see her being, I know we're already late into the DC universe, but she's almost going to be like the Iron Man of it. You can see that kind of coming forward. You know, because obviously he kind of kickstarted the whole thing. You know, that was the real moment in Suicide Squad, seeing her character in there, where you're like, yeah, I want to see more of her. And then you finally get it here and you're like, this is what we've all been waiting for and what we all want. And so seeing more of her going forward, even if it's just like dropping roles into like other films and stuff, wherever she's going to be, you know it's going to be like really fun, like one of the best characters in that universe by quite a way, because she is just, you'd never know what she's going to do.
And she's so unique as well. It's like, no one else is going to use a glitter gun on a cop or like, you know.
That was probably my favourite set piece, actually, that whole police station raid. That was just so good.
Just looked amazing. And her sliding on the floor of the cell and in her little white boots and just like...
And her cocaine power-up that she got.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, that was kind of naughty as well. Really cool. And I also loved her when she was slingshotting with Huntress on the back of the bike with the wheels. That was amazing. You just like, come on, let's go.
I always feel more invested in that kind of action where, again, it feels like there's genuine sort of peril that you could actually get hurt. Whereas when it's just a massive CGI explosion or whatever, you know, you don't really feel it. But this felt like kind of proper stunts and
a chick on roller skates. Yeah. That could go terribly wrong if she hits a pebble. For those of us who had roller skates as kids. Yeah. So there's real danger there.
Yeah.
In uneven surfaces, aside from anything else.
I'm just looking forward to the Harley and Bruce spin-off, I think. Like her and her hyena, who was definitely a highlight of the film for me, I think.
Yeah.
Just even though their kiss, almost kiss, when they were like eating the like red licorice thing. Ugh, I'm not a fan of that. But that's what I mean. It's like such an unpredictable character. And also, unlike Joker, who we've just seen so much on screen. Obviously, Joaquin Phoenix's Joker has been incredible. Everyone's loved it. And it was a really interesting movie and it took it in a different direction. But that doesn't feel like the beginning of a franchise. I don't really want to see where that goes particularly. I'm very happy with that as a standalone film. Mm. Unlike with this, you know, you've got the three Birds of Prey doing their own thing. You've got Harley doing her thing. You know, that's two sequel movies that I think people were definitely going to go watch as well. I'd go watch.
Yeah, me too, definitely.
Me too. And, you know, she does drive off into the sunset with Cassandra and her cheese sandwich, sort of a bit Thelma and Louise there. I would totally watch that, the two of them hanging out together.
Definitely. One last point, because there is a post-credits semi-scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's slightly underwhelming. What happens is we get to the end of the movie. There's no like mid-credits one, but then there is a post-credits, as the name would entail. It's no actual footage. It's just Harley saying, oh, you've waited around this long, you idiots. Well, let me tell you a big secret. Batman is... And then it just stops. And that's it for the post-credits scene. It's very much in that lane of... There was the one where Captain America was at the end of one of the Marvel films and he just said patience and gave a little lesson. And it felt like that kind of area.
Yeah, it was kind of funny, but not really worth sitting in your seat all that time for.
Not essential.
No.
Definitely not essential. It's a shame because I think people are so ready for like big setups now with post-credit scenes. And so when you do have stuff like that, it's kind of funny, but also kind of disappointing because you did just sit through like 5 minutes of credits while needing the piss.
Yes, but you should have read all those credits because there's some very fine work by those different departments.
Well, I did sit through them to also look out for Jared Leto's name to see if it was anywhere. It wasn't. Mm. So there you go, fun little fact.
I don't know that Jared really wants to have anything to do with it anymore, does he?
Well, he wanted a solo film. There was supposed to be a Harley and Joker.
Yeah, but I get the feeling he didn't want to be in anyone else's.
No. There was a report, I think it was a Hollywood Reporter, who said that he was very, very upset when Joaquin got his own Joker film and Jared Leto did not. Which you can kind of imagine the studio politics and everything going on there, especially because, you know, Joker was only a small budget relatively, you know, comparatively to these other ones. But then it did get Oscar noms and has made a billion. So Warner Bros. Probably made the right decision. So to wrap it up, what was your favourite Birds of Prey moment, Jane?
Well, it's probably twinned with finally getting a sandwich, which sort of reminded me a little bit of Jo getting her book at the end of Little Women, whereby it's not a guy, it's not like anything particularly, it's just the thing that you most covet and love and want, and it's something we can all relate to. I love that. But also I have to say, I've mentioned it already, the roller skating chase of the car and the whipping around on the bike with Huntress, I just thought that was really cool and really just showed their sort of ingenuity and their sisterhood, and I loved it.
Yeah, I'm going to say the assault on the police station, because I just thought it was so much fun with all the glitter gun and the slow-mo and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so that bit was a highlight for me.
Well, you've stolen mine.
I was
trying to think of another one. I'm so bad at thinking. I mean, I like the whole first half of the movie. I thought the first half was way stronger than the second. Just like the fun editing and everything like that and the fight scene. So I'm going to go with Black Canary's fight when she kind of defends Harley.
Oh, yeah,
that's a strange great
man. From the sort of, yeah, the
predatory
man in the bar.
Yeah, I think that, like, it was just like, oh, she is so badass. And then you also kind of get Roman looking up, being like devilishly evil and coming up with a plan, and you're just like, it really sets everything in motion for what's going to happen with the rest of the film.
Okay, so I think we probably should now go out and find ourselves a greasy egg, cheese and bacon sandwich.
Oh, yes, please.
Let's do that. Okay, we'll be back with our regular podcast next week. Do join us then and let us know what you thought of Birds of Prey.